Paranormal.
Welcome to Theory of Paranormal. I am your host, Pax, with Dalton. This is season 2, podcast number 4. It's going to be based on what an investigation is, what it entails, what is used during an investigation, and what is the purpose of an investigation. How are you doing today, Dalton?
Doing pretty well, man. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. Thanks for asking. So I figured we would let all the listeners hear a little bit about what actually happens during a paranormal investigation and what is utilized during it and what the process is. I know we always talk a lot about paranormal things, but we never really unpackage and get down to the nitty-gritty of what it's like being a paranormal investigator. So I figured we could definitely showcase that and maybe speak a little bit about when we investigated where the other weekend, Dalton?
May Stringer.
There you go, May Stringer. For anybody that has listened to the previous podcast on the May Stringer, much appreciated. If you haven't, if you go back, I believe it's to the 12th podcast, which is the last one for season 1, it should be there, about the May Stringer house, and it's a great listen, and you'll learn a lot of good things about that place. So,
a lot of good stuff at May Stringer.
Without a doubt. So
we also had a special guest with us that day, too.
Yes, we did. We had an individual, a great person, a young fellow by the name of Luca. He volunteered to come on out, never really did investigation in his life, never had any background with the paranormal or any devices or anything, and came on
out.
Pretty
much a skeptic.
Yep, and was able to have some experiences and utilize some equipment and be able to walk away from everything and say, okay, I have some things to think about. So
I think he had a lot to think about.
Oh, yeah.
And we do, like I said, you know, on previous podcasts, we do invite people to come out and investigate with us. And, you know, he pretty much took us up on our offer and basically to come out and get his own experience. So that's kind of what he did.
It was really good. Took initiative. Some people might have been hesitant. Some people might have said, hey, which way are you guys going? All right, I'm going the other way. Some people might have said, let's do it. But it was pretty neat to see how Mr. Luca decided to jump on in, get in the middle of the mix, and assert himself and see what he could do to be part of the team for that night, take initiative. And I think he did pretty amazing.
He did, and you gave him all brand new batteries, brand new equipment, so he knew nothing was tampered with or that we didn't have some kind of little remote control in our pocket turning things off and on. But
yep.
All in all, it was a good night.
Yeah, it was good stuff. What we ended up doing, since me and Dalton knew this was Luca's first time ever doing anything, we gave him a digital recorder, a temperature gauge that gauged the ambient temperature plus the humidity level. Also, we ended up giving him a flashlight. And then besides that, what we ended up doing is giving him a K2 meter for electromagnetic frequency reads in the environment. And as Dalton said, all brand new batteries, everything was packaged brand new. So Luca was able to unpackage everything, put everything together, see how it operated and worked, gave him a quick tutorial, and then he was off on his way investigating. And then at the end of the night, as a thank you from Theory Paranormal, Luca was able to walk away with all this brand new equipment. And from what I understand, he ended up going out the next few days and spelunking and investigating on his own with some locations he found, taking all his newfound knowledge. So it was definitely a very positive experience, which was very nice to see, because sometimes when people investigate for the very first time, what your brain tells you versus what your body tells you are two different things. And sometimes people, unfortunately, are ill-prepared for what it is they may experience. So.
Well, I think the skepticism, though, and a lot of people get over them. It's, you know, it's, I don't want to say like a power being a skeptic, because it's kind of like the unknown. If you want to say, let's just break it down into some kind of term. I think it's more the unknown that intrigues people. Like, does it exist? Is it real? It's the question behind the skepticism. And then once they step into it, and then they realize, because I believe his first initiative where we had them give him a little tour of the house so he can get familiar with the house while we were kind of grabbing gear and stuff, he had an experience right away.
Oh, he did. And we'll,
with somebody else's flashlight.
Yeah.
So it's the, I think it's the unknown, you know, being with, cause we've had plenty of skeptics come investigate with us. We're not there to change their mind. We're not there to tell them anything. We actually let them take part. We encourage them to ask questions. That way, if the light goes off, the K2 goes off, if something comes across the spirit box or whatever, then they know, hey, I asked that question and I got a response. It's not like we're always asking the questions and then the responses are coming. So, yeah, so kudos to him, man, for coming out and, you know, getting a good experience. And I like I said, I think he has a lot to think about now after that night of what went on.
Oh, yeah. And we'll get into that in a little bit. So what we're going to do right now is I'm going to talk a little bit about the different types of investigations of the way paranormal investigation can go. The first and foremost, which me and Dalton are very accustomed to and used to, is we'll get a phone call, email, message, or sometimes it'll just be by secondhand knowledge of somebody knows somebody because somebody knew me or Dalton of what our side hobby is, and they don't want to put it out there, but it'll get back to us, and we'll get a message of saying, hey, we need help, or can you come on out? Sometimes people will be a little bit more forthright and just look for us point blank, contact us, email us, message us, and say, hey, here's what's going on. What do you advise? What do you think? Are you guys going to be in the area? Can you help out? Sometimes it'll just be by a simple chance meeting. We'll be out and about at a restaurant or a different location, somewhere socially doing something, and in casual conversation, it kind of comes up what we do sometimes. And then the next thing that we know, right then and there, people find out what's going on with what our hobby is, and then they'll start just sharing information with us. For some reason, me and Dalton are always on the receiving end of people telling us things that they never tell anybody. So it's definitely interesting. But the reason why I bring that up is because that's the first way that we get into investigations, and people just will tell us things by chance, and then we'll just get right to it. The next thing that we'll have for an investigation is it could be a group investigation where a bunch of people get together and we just go check something out socially for fun. So, I mean, we may bring some equipment, we might not, just because of how me and Dalton are with abilities that we utilize sometimes. The third way an investigation is, it's more formal. I've been on teams before where people will contact the team. We will do a preliminary phone call to get some information. If it seems about right and it works out for timing and the people that can go and so forth, then it'll be a meet and greet. It'll normally be on a neutral ground in a public setting, you know, a coffee shop or a park, somewhere that's public, because both parties never met before. So just to be fair, sometimes if it's a public venue or a residential venue that is well-known establishment, sometimes we will actually go to the location. I've done private, residential, commercial locations to investigate. And once we do the meet and greet, we will, depending on how it goes, if it goes to the next level, give them a packet to fill out and get back to us. And in this packet, it could be up to a myriad of 150 questions, ranging from everything of maybe some medical stuff to background, the history of the individual that we're looking potentially assisting, because this helps paint the picture of overall what's going. A lot of times in my past, we would go to investigate somewhere and we would not get the correct information. So as we're going to do our thing, come to find out, it wasn't necessarily a real issue of there being paranormal activity. It was more of a issue of a personal nature that needed to get sorted out by certain professionals. So by having the questionnaire, it helps paint the picture overall collectively, because a lot of people, they don't want to put out what their personal information is on a myriad of things, which I completely understand. You know, you're dealing with strangers, you don't want other people to know what's going on. But in the paranormal world, I mean, we kind of have to paint everything with a broad brush to understand what's going on. So that way, when we do go into the investigation, we have that much more information, which could lend credence to a situation or give answers. There, after the fact of the questionnaire happening, if everything's copacetic and it's agreed upon, then the team shows up. And depending on the way the scenario is, either A, where we're investigating somebody from that establishment will stay on premise and they will be there to assist if we have any questions or need anything. Other times, everybody will completely leave that's associated to the premise and just let the paranormal team do what they have to do and investigate. Once everything gets done, then all the stuff gets wrapped up and you will be able to, when things come to a conclusion, all the evidence gets reviewed, and then there'll be another meeting time to go over what was found with the individuals of who we're trying to get answers for. 9 times out of 10 with the paranormal stuff, people just want closure. They just want to be able to know how, what, or why something is happening and what potentially can be done to alleviate it, to mitigate it, or to make it stop. You know, for everybody that's listening, think about any job that you know nothing about. You know, if you're a doctor, think about being a mechanic. If you're a mechanic, think about being a computer programmer. If you're a computer programmer, think about being a firefighter. All of these things we know of, but when it comes down to the nitty-gritty of knowing exactly what these individuals do and how they do it, everybody's lost. No one's going to know unless you're specialized in that. Well, that's kind of how it is that I've seen in my professional experience more times than not, unfortunately, is individuals coming to individuals that deal with the paranormal to help give answers. Now, I brought up a whole bunch of processes from the quick and fun to the more structured and rigid type of investigation. I'm going to talk about some equipment quick that's used, and I'll explain why. The most basic.
Well, to go back to the investigating part, though, sometimes we go to places and we'll investigate. Let's say they tell us, kind of give us an idea. A lot of times, with the abilities that we have, the, you know, being that we're sensitive and the things that we can do,
intuitive.
Yeah, the sensitivity, the intuition, the you know, me hearing them, things of that nature. A lot of times we go to investigation and I'll be kind of like, you know, hey, don't really tell me nothing. Let me try to figure out what's going on. Then I'll tell you and you just tell me if it's correct. Because sometimes we go to investigation and we get there to investigate, we can kind of walk up and tell, like, okay, you got one person that's involved in it. Like, they know something's going on. And then you have two or three other people standing there clearly skeptic. They're skeptic to hear it till tomorrow. You know what I mean? We kind of got to approach it like, okay, so you got one person that's believing that something's going on. You got another person or two more people standing there, you know, thinking we're just out to blow smoke. And so a lot of times I'll approach it with me and Pax, we'll approach it as where I'll just say, hey, you know what? Don't tell me anything. Let us just come in and investigate. And then whatever evidence we find, we will relay it to you, and then you just tell us if it's an experience you've had or if it's somebody you know, if we get names, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So you can kind of see where I'm going with that side of the investigation. We also, another way that we investigate too is if it becomes like we go there, whether they tell us a few things of experiences that they're having, let's say shadow people in certain areas of the place, you know, cold spots, movement, anything like that. A lot of times we'll go in there and that stuff will happen. So to figure out why that's happening, we step back to our research episode, which is where we might go down to the county library or to the courthouse and get more information on the house when it was built or the actual property, or if there was something there before, like we talked about in our possession episode, when I talked about the apartment being built in the middle of the plantation, and that lady's apartment was exactly where the house was built. So that it can get as deep as that. I mean, that all that kind of things you were mentioning to me were still kind of lightweight investigations. You can get down to the thick of it where, you know, you're in the courthouse or you're in the library and you're reading up and you're trying to catch up on who lived there before. You're looking at death certificates, who might have died in the place that we're investigating, that these people that have bought the house or have a commercial residence don't know anything about that. They weren't told. So you find out somebody was shot in that store or they died in that house. You get what I'm saying there? There's so much to do to try to give your client the answer that they're looking for, instead of just going in there going, yeah, the flashlight came on, you're haunted, have a good day. You know.
Well, it's a lot more though than with the paranormal. It's a lot more than just looking for death. Sometimes we could do properties to where things happen strangely that happens either certain times of a decade, certain times of a year, or certain times of the day. But I don't want everybody listening to think, oh, paranormal is automatically equating to death. It doesn't. Sometimes it could be around a certain type of season or the year where something just happens. And it may...
Well, you can get into residual.
Yeah.
To be a replay in time. You know, what might have gone on. You know, if you got, you know, a house built in 2005, but yet you're seeing a lady from the 1800s walk through the house, you know, then you kind of wonder, okay, did she just wander in there and make herself at home? Or is that a residual haunt? Is it a replay in time? What was here on this property beforehand? So, yeah, it's doesn't really entail about the death. But when I talk about looking up death certificates, if you got somebody in there, if we're picking up somebody that nobody knows, then we obviously have to find out who it is. And if we say, if we go to the courthouse or the library and, you know, Billy Joe Bob, you know, died of a gunshot wound in the house, and these people don't know about it, well, that might be who we're talking to. So now they got clarification on, okay, this guy passed away on this property, this is who's haunting the place. Yep. Is what I was kind of getting at.
Yep. Now, just to touch back, the equipment that is 9 times out of 10 utilized during a paranormal investigation is actually it's for lack of a better term, it's scientific equipment. It is used to gauge or measure something in the environment. So I'm going to touch base on a lot of the equipment that's used. And I'm sure when you're listening, you're going to nod your head and be like, I've heard of that, or I've seen it on TV, or I even have something like that. But some of the most basic stuff is nothing more than a simple flashlight. A flashlight that you can turn on and off, or you can unscrew the back of the cap to where it's right there in the cusp, to where if you have it just right in the sweet spot, the light may come on, may turn off. And the flashlight's used just as a signal indicator, on, off, when you communicate, when you ask questions. The other side
command. And we do use multiple flashlights. We know the debunking error of that. We don't just use one flashlight, basically. Yeah. We know that that could malfunction and actually go off by itself.
Yep.
We know the debunking part of that. So we do use multiple lights, and sometimes multiple lights with different colored lenses, blue, red, green, purple, whatever. And if we're getting responses on what we're asking about, like turn on the blue for yes and the red for no, and we're getting those kind of responses, then obviously it's intelligent. So we do know, just to throw it out there for the people, we don't just go by one flashlight. We do use multiple flashlights.
Yep. Now, the next thing, which is very basic, a electromagnetic frequency detector that will be able to detect magnetic frequencies in the environment. Some people utilize something that's properly named a K2, that is something that can be used to test everything from overzealous power lines that's putting out too much power in the environment to bleed out to where you have electrical lines or electrical sockets, everything, you know, even to where lights are putting out energy that can be read that way. Something I use that's a little bit more specialized, I actually have something called a ion box detector that's able to gauge the amount of ions in a 1/2 foot by 1/2 foot space. And if you think of static electricity, all of those are made of ions, positive or negative. And depending on the mode this box is on, it's able to show me how many negative or positive ions are in the environment. So if I have it on a setting and I'm trying to do something at a location, investigating, and I say, hey, take some energy, you know, do what you got to do. And I start seeing instantaneously after I threw that question or statement, and I start seeing the ions on the display, does a numerical value, once it gauges the environment, start dropping right then and there, then I know something is yielding and taking that energy that's in the environment. Something else that's utilized is a temperature gauge. There's two types. You have an ambient temperature gauge, which you just turn on, and it's able to read the ambient temperature in the environment that you're in. Sometimes they will have a humidity level also to let you know how humid it is in the room. Then there is a other temperature gauge, which is a thermal handheld device that you can point at something and press the button or pull the trigger, depending on the type it is. And then it's able to shoot either a clear or some sort of laser, and wherever it makes contact, it's going to tell you what the temperature is wherever it makes contact at. And those are good because a lot of times when you investigate, somebody could be like, oh, look, my whole arm is cold, but the rest of me is hot. And if you can't go over and touch that person to say, yeah, you're right, you're pretty cold. Well, if you're 10 feet away, 8 feet away, you just pick up one of the thermal devices and point it and click the button, and then it will read right there and let you know what the temperature is. It's very, very useful. Something else that's utilized that's gained popularity more in the last, I would say, 10 years, 12 years max maybe, is Ghost Box or EVP Box. And I want you to think of, if you're in a car and you are listening to a radio station, or for instance, if you are listening to a song and you want to listen to the next one, you hit the button and it goes to the next one. Well, that's all this does, is it constantly scans to the next station. And in between each station, there's white noise and static and energy that's floating around. And the way this works, I kid you not, you can research this, you can look it up. Dalton has been there in person. He's used the device with me. We're not going to set you astray and tell you a bunch of things that are fake here at Theory Paranormal. You can ask questions and you will have a disembodied voice answer you back. So,
true story.
True story. So that's another device that's utilized. Then you have a simple camera that you take photos with. You have two types. You have the type that take the black and white film or the color film that does the negatives that you have to get developed, or you have the digital that takes an impression of the environment and then puts it on a memory card. Likewise with video cameras. You have a video camera that records black and white for night. It can do full spectrum, which captures all the frequencies of light that our eyes cannot physically see. Then you have thermal cameras that's able to pick up heat signatures by radiation of the body. And then you have cameras that are simple, like we use if you're just going to go out and record something, like a soccer game, and you know you got family playing soccer and you want to record them, just a simple camera. All of those items are able to pick up things that we can't normally see sometimes during an investigation. All of those,
or the good old cell phone.
Yep, or the good old cell phone. Likewise,
I've taken plenty of photos with the cell phone and have caught plenty of most all my evidence lately have been right off my cell phone.
Well, cell phones are so
I do like
go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I do like carrying separate cameras. I do prefer the digital, even though the analog type cameras might pick up something different, but I do prefer the digital because it has the screen on the back.
Oh, yeah.
And once I take a series of photos, I can just stand there and look at the screen and see if anything popped up on it.
Well, likewise with those, what you've probably seen on a lot of popular TV shows that do the paranormal is they'll set up a security system of cameras and then have like their HQ or central station or their base station where they can go back and see all their cameras they have displayed. You know, those can be full spectrum. Those can be thermal. Those can be black and white. They can be night vision. They can be regular.
They can be motion.
Motion activated. You know, the thing that's good about those is we physically can't see things just because of the way our bodies are. But with the equipment that I just mentioned, it gives you displays and readouts and gauges things for us to see. I mean, we got our faculties of our eyes, of our nose, you know, taste, touch, and feeling on our body. But that only goes so far in the paranormal world. All of these other things help paint a picture to what's going on. Motion detectors, you know, Dawn brought up. You put some of those other places. They go off. Something's moving somewhere. You may not be able to see it physically. You know, if you got a camera there, go roll that footage. See what's there. You might see something. You might, if a motion detector for a camera, okay, it took a photo of something. Go see what's going on. The whole purpose of all these items is to assist, to help paint the picture of what's going on and to give, honestly, data, scientific data, if you will, to say, okay, here factually and scientifically, here's what I've been able to gather and gauge in the environment. And then at the end of the night, pack everything up, you go spend, it could be anywhere from hours to a few days, reviewing everything, and then getting back with the individual you're trying to assist and say, hey, here's what we figured out. We asked a bunch of questions. One thing I also want to mention is digital recorders. They could be either tape recorders that use the tapes like people used in the 90s and 80s and early 2000s, or they could be a digital recorder. Those also work. But what I wanted to get to is, say you are sitting in a room and a motion sensor goes off in another, well, you go defer to the camera system that's in that room and you kind of see something, but you're unsure. And so you go listen to the video camera and you can hear somebody talking, but you can't hear really what's going on. Well, come to find out, somebody was in that room with a digital tape recorder and they're asking questions. And next thing you know, when you do the timestamp of what the video was recording and you marry it up with the digital recorder and you hear what the question was, you play the digital recorder back and something or someone is responding to you with an answer. One other thing that's really not mentioned that much in the paranormal investigation world is a simple playback device of video or audio, of being able to listen to your research that you acquired or see it visually. One thing that I cannot stress enough is a lot of people that don't have a lot of background in the paranormal is they will sometimes get evidence of a sound or a voice or something in a video and it doesn't sound legible. And they'll be like, yeah, I asked a question and it was just this weird, blah, 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 and I don't know what that meant. So I just said whatever and just kept going, see what else I can find. Well, it behooves anybody that gets any evidence of something that doesn't make sense, slow it down. Slow it down and hear what it has to say. Break it down and you will be surprised and blown away by the fact that little illegible noise that made no sense, come to find out, actually was either a few words or even a whole sentence. You know, one thing you got to remember, wherever the other side is, their whole premise is different from ours. You know, we got physical bodies. We have all of this on this side. That side, most likely probably just energy and a consciousness. So how things work there may not work identical to here. So all these things help us figure out what it is that we have. Now, this is for the equipment side of the house and the scientific, logical side of doing things. Another way the paranormal can interact and happen is on the metaphysical side. That could be by bringing in crystals or candles for light therapy / energy, or crystals that harness different frequency levels that could go with the way the body naturally has chakras, and those could help different power points, if you will be, for an individual that may be intuitive or gifted. Sometimes the environments affect somebody that's gifted with abilities. See what I did there? I used both words there, Dalton. And and sometimes not necessarily having the equipment ready to go, but just going to a location that's already been determined, those locations can sense what's happening. And it can reduce results for people that have abilities, unfortunately, that aren't positive. Now, the reason why I bring up the scientific side of paranormal investigating, because those are the devices that gauge everything. Dalton already touched base. You have the research side of the house, which is unveiling things that you may or may not already know by talking to people, by talking to the family, by talking to neighbors, by talking to local establishments that have higher, you know, archives of history records or things that have to do with purchasing of homes and different ongoings with land and deeds and all that stuff. You have the medical physical side of the house. If you want to not necessarily look at it from a sense of hardcore data, but from a metaphysical spiritual side. And then there's one last side, and it's something I came up with when I actually gave a seminar at a university when I was a guest speaker. Intro to Paranormal 101 is what I called it. I call it the triangle of truth. On one corner, you have science. On the other corner, you are going to have the metaphysical. On the last corner, you are going to have layman's terms of it is what it is. Now, out of all three of those modalities, if you cannot arrive at an answer, then you have what's in the very middle of that triangle, which is, it's just the truth. It's just there. So I came up with this analogy and I called it the triangle of truth. You know, the world that we live in is defined by structure. It's defined by society. It's defined by science and all the things that give our world reasoning and logic and definition. Well, the paranormal, you can't use reasoning, you can't use logic, and you can't use definition. Those three items, if it doesn't match up to anything, but it's still there, you still have things that are very, very real, then it's the triangle of truth. It's just, it is what it is. It's there. Now,
well, also, you know, we use a lot of the multiple equipment types and stuff like that also, because some entities, and we're still coming down to what kind of energy they put off. They obviously put off different types of energy, so one device might also be easier for them to manipulate than the other device. And then it comes down to this, them being picky. Like, some of them refuse to use the flashlight. They only want to use the K2, or some don't want to use the K2. They only want to use the flashlight, or they only want to talk through the spirit box. You know, it's a lot of other things as well, other than just using these devices for scientific meaning or scientific, you know, evidence. It's also because it gives the I mean, it kind of sounds weird to say it, but it gives the entity a multiple way to communicate, and that's they actually take advantage of that. So
just look at them as form of apps, if I have to use an analogy for today's age. You know, you have all these different apps to communicate with people on phones or the computer. Well, all these different electronic devices are different ways for people to communicate or spirits with the paranormal world. Now, the third type of investigation that there is, and there actually is a way to do this, is actually investigating for fun, not a business-minded centric type of environment, which me and Dalton do when we can get out and get away, is we'll just find a place and just get into it and enjoy ourselves. When it is residential or commercial or private, meaning nobody wants to know, you know, putting their information out there, so we keep things quiet. That's, for a better lack of words, that's business for us, meaning we're there to get answers the best that we can and give whoever it is we're trying to assist help. We don't do it for money. We don't get paid for this stuff. We do it because for some reason we have some sort of natural abilities. We have an insight, and it's like a good book. No matter how many times me and Dalton have ever put down this subject in our life, it comes back to us over and over and over. So one day we were just like, all right, well, that's it. You know, we're just going to keep at with it and go from there. But
well, if you have the ability to help people, regardless of what it is, whether it be the paranormal or you got a talent, any kind of talent to, you know, or a skill set, sort of say, I mean, you know, a guy goes into the military, is trained by the military, comes out, most likely that guy is not going to go sit behind a desk and push a pencil. He's going to be a first responder some kind of way, because that's what he's been doing, basically. So he's either going to become law enforcement or a firefighter, or, you know, if he was in the military and had some medical background, he's going to become an EMT. If you have the skill set and the ability to help people, it's, you know, normal. I don't know how to word this properly, not to try to offend somebody, but normal people, they're going to use that. You're going to go help people because that's what you know you can do. You're not just going to sit on it and go, okay, well, it's nice to know that you got an issue. I can't, you know, I don't feel like helping you. It's not in our vocabulary. So when, you know, growing up and we've been dealing with this for a very long time, it would have been nice to have known other people to help us through certain situations. I'm sure, you know, for me especially, I know for myself.
Oh, I can definitely.
I would have loved.
I can agree to that on my side also.
Right. I would have loved to have been able to talk to somebody and have them help me understand what's going on. Back then, you didn't. I mean, those people existed, but nobody talked about it freely up until the TV shows, you know, started coming out, and then it's okay to talk about, you don't belong in a loony bin. So yes, in our situation, we have the ability and the means to go try to help people understand or try to narrow their situation down to where they know what's going on, that, you know, and a lot of times there's nothing harmful by what's going on. You get those every now and then, but the bottom line is, you know, yeah, we're going to go help people. I mean, that's just, you know, I know what it's like not to have been helped and, you know, kind of sit there and try to figure all this out myself. It drove me nuts sometimes, but, you know, now I got a more understanding and a clearer vision of it. So why not, you know, go try to help somebody? But that's what we do.
Oh, yeah. And you know, that's the thing right there, I think, in a way that makes it unique. At least for me and Dalton. I mean, I know a lot of people that I've seen over the years, you know, they'll see the paranormal stuff on TV and they'll go get some stuff and do it casually, and that's fine. Then there's people.
Tire kickers.
Well, then there's individuals that will try to get a little bit deeper and join a group or a crew and try to learn a little bit more than what you would learn just by reading a book. And that's good also. Unfortunately, like everything in life, the paranormal is not always roses and peaches. There is an ugly side to it. Me and Dalton really don't touch base too much on it, but there is a negative side to it that can affect lives, that can affect personas, that can affect you physically. It could even affect your sanity. And the thing is I don't want to say you have to have thick skin for it, but when you get into it, and if you get into it to the level that me and Dalton are at, you kind of have to gut check yourself and say, do I want to go and continue with this and do what I can if you get to a certain level to help people? Or are you doing it just as a side hobby and that's it? Or do you decide to say one day, I'm checking out. I've experienced enough. I've seen enough. I don't want to question things. That's it. I'm walking away from it. Some individuals I've known that have tried to get into the paranormal, and unfortunately, they did not have good experiences. It was more than what they were willing to accept or handle that put them in conflict with their own belief systems, their own theology systems, their own logical systems of what the things they picked up and based their own viewpoints on through society, through either education or family or research. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's the paranormal is not for everybody, but I highly caution anybody, if it's something that you do want to have an interest in, there's nothing wrong with that, but understand there's different levels of it and there's different intensities. So it's one thing.
Well, let's just say this. I mean, you know, it's to me, it's a bottom line. There's a bottom line to me. It is kind of cut and dry. And again, I'm not trying to change anybody's beliefs. This stuff is very real. I mean, I've had enough experiences in it to know that it's very real. And Pax, you've had enough experiences your lifetime. You know, it's very real. So what we tell people is, like, even this guy that come out, Luca, he come out and investigate. And we were sitting there having a little food before we went to the place to investigate. You know, I told him straight up, this is very real. This place that we're going to, we've never had an issue. That's another thing. Hey, you know, if you do want to go out and investigate, or you do want to try it and you've never been out, then try to, you won't know. That's the hardest thing is, not the hardest thing, but that's the most difficult thing, is that you don't know where you're walking into. Is there a malicious entity in there? Is there something that will follow you home? Where we take people, we take them to May Stringer House, because May Stringer House, those entities choose to stay there. We've never had an issue with something following us home, or anybody we've taken there had any kind of issues after the investigation. And what I told Luca, I know you're a skeptic and all, but this stuff is very real, and there is that chance. You know, if you try to wander off and do investigations by yourself, first, we go a thing called safety in numbers. We try not to investigate alone. It happens sometimes, but we try to do it as a group. There's a reason for that. But there's that chance, man. There's that chance, like you said, that something can follow you home and wreck your life.
Yep.
That is the real side of paranormal investigating. This is the side that the TV shows, some of them will show you that. Some of them will hint to it, but they won't tell you that, hey, if you go out and investigate that sanitarium over there where crazies were at one time, there's a chance something might follow you home and just wreck your life. Like, you never knew how much negativity could be poured out in your lifetime and in a short amount of time. And it won't happen right away. It doesn't hit you at the point of where it just nails you. It chips away at your life little pieces at a time until months down the road, you're just kind of sitting there going, what just happened? Why am I having this run of bad luck? Why is this? Why is that? So, and I'll be honest with you, you don't have to go do a paranormal investigation for that to happen. I've known people that have literally just went on a ghost tour, or, you know, and I'm not knocking ghost tours, and I'm not trying to tell nobody not to go do them. I'm just saying, when you go to places that are haunted, just realize, even if you're a skeptic, just put it in the back of your mind that what if there is a real possibility that this is real, and what are the consequences of it? What could happen? And that's just the factor of us just saying, we don't, like me, I don't care. If it's a fire, I'm going to run to it. You know, it's just me. But I just wanted to throw that out there as like, cautionary, there is a reality.
A cautionary tale to say, hey.
So. Yeah. It's not just go, hey, this guy on TV did it. Because these guys on TV, a lot of the shows, I know some of them personally, and they're not going to come out and show you
the bad stuff.
First of all, because first of all, it deals with their personal life.
Not only
so
that,
they're not going to come out and...
It's entertainment. You know, there's the hook. It's TV. It's entertainment. That's the whole purpose of television, is to make you come back and see more and more and more. And that's how the next season gets revolved around, you know, and things get renewed.
Right. It's true. And, you know, there's one show where they claim to have been possessed or whatever. I don't know about all that, but I will say that there is, when you dabble with the paranormal like that, there could be consequences to it. So, you know,
so
there's some realism to it.
So with everything that me and Dalton just said, I'll say this, and this is probably the most sobering, realist moment in all of our podcasts here at Theory of Paranormal, that me and Dalton really put it on the table for you and told you exactly how it was to that scale. It's not that we didn't want to share this with the listeners that are listening, but we like to bring out all the different experiences that we've had at Theory of Paranormal, and also before we were Theory of Paranormal through our different backgrounds, to give enlightenment and share things that we went through. So that way, A, you don't have to, but B, so that way you can get perspective. The biggest thing that I will caution anybody and everybody that wants to do anything with the paranormal, like anything in life, if this is something that you're earnest about and you really want to get into it, perfect, go for it. Have an experience, see what it's about, see if it's for you. But in the same token, do research. Find something particular about the background or the paranormal or energy or chakras or people with abilities, the different types of modalities of people that are gifted, you know, or about the earth or, you know, quantum physics or whatever you want. Research. Read, learn, because what that does is that builds you up until you get to a certain academia level to where you're enlightened and you understand things. So when things happen on certain levels, you can say, well, this happened because X, Y, Z. And then you can say, okay, that makes sense. And then you go on to the next thing. Because in the paranormal world, at least for me and Dalton, the last thing that we ever want is to go into a scenario and not know what or why something happened, period. Or even to walk away without having some sort of, maybe not 100% answer, but just walking away without having an answer, utilizing any type of logic. Because then you're sitting there scratching your head with more questions, walking away than what you went into the scenario with. And you're not
helping the client. I mean, yeah.
If you don't go
in there and get some kind of answer, and it might take multiple times. I mean, I've told, you know, we've done certain investigations where we've come back 3 or 4 times and they're like, oh, why didn't you tell us that the first time? And I'm like, well, because I want to make sure that what I'm giving you is factual information to the best of our knowledge, to whatever we're getting responses to. If they keep repeating the same thing, then I'm going to take it as a fact. And I'll just let you know that, you know, upon our evidence, this is what we're finding out. And it might take multiple times. Look at May Stringer House. You know, very simple. The lady, I forget her name, the first wife. Anyway, she and the daughter are supposed to be buried
on the premise,
on the property. And so that night of investigating, we pretty much, I went into that line of questioning. Of course, it built up to like where they were going to tell us, but then they got quiet. Like they don't want to tell us.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's Morena. That's her name. I'm sorry. Morena May. Her and the daughter are buried on that property. Now that's hearsay right now. Nobody knows for certain because the courthouse burnt down two different times. So a lot of the documents and stuff are lost.
Yep.
And they're buried without a marked grave. So, you know, who's to know, right? It's just hearsay right now.
Yep.
We go in there with that's one of our purposes of going there is to try to figure out, are they buried there and where they're buried at? And if we ever get the answer, I don't know, but we're pretty close.
Yep. As far as it goes, I know we were going to touch base a little bit on Luca's experiences in a nutshell. Luca got to experience the K2 detector going off, flashlights going off, two of them at the same time where they were blinking back and forth to each other from across the room.
When the kids were playing.
When the kids were playing back and forth, he got to also hear the ghost box go off and make some noise. And then we also had a temperature gauge to where he felt really cold. When he got tested with the thermal temperature gauge from about 5 feet away, his whole body was roughly about 93 degrees. And he told me his hand was cold. So I checked his hand and his thumb was 71 degrees. And, you know, showed him. And I know he was pretty surprised. It's one thing if someone does an investigation that's never done it, and maybe they have one thing happen, but he had a few things happen. So.
Well, his first experience, like I said, was he went up to the attic with the one lady that was staying there to hang out with us.
Yep.
And he come right down. He's like, I couldn't believe it. She set the flashlight down, asked a few questions. Flashlight came on by itself.
Yeah.
Now she didn't have a twisty flashlight. She had a push button flashlight.
Yeah.
So totally different flashlight. So, but also he had experience of putting brand new batteries in the one device. And then within 10 or 15 minutes, the device died.
Yep.
Where they drained the batteries out of it.
And then he would go check it. And then he would have to turn it back on. The batteries would be full. And then with a matter of 2 minutes, they would be fully drained again. And I remember he got annoyed because he kept having to go back over and over. And then because we kept going from the third floor to the second floor, and we could hear the beep when the camera would shut off. And it was almost like they were playing a game because I walked with them down to the second floor. He put the batteries, checked them, powered everything back up, and we didn't even get 8 feet away. And then you hear the camera shut off again, and it was like they were playing a game. Like, they just wanted us to go upstairs so they could turn it off. And I just remember...
Yeah, because we had a ball in the hallway.
Yep, yep.
And we were trying to film the ball, and it's like they didn't want to film in that hallway.
And that's, as a quick side note, that's something else that's utilized a lot in the paranormal world are trigger objects. Trigger objects is a coined phrase for something that's either tied to the error of the environment that you're in. So say we're investigating a home that was up during the 1800s. If you brought something from that time period to that environment and used it as a Q&A, then potentially it might rouse some activity for the individuals that have crossed over and that are there. Or also, namely, as Dalton said, we used a ball. We used a beach ball. And sometimes you can use objects that aren't necessarily scientifically related, but they can still be used nonetheless to be gauged to see if they change in the environment. If you know for a fact you don't have... Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, you can also use it to get a response.
Yep.
Like when I did a Perryville Battlefield, I didn't do what one group did. They used an actual, you know, black powder gun. I used a cap gun. And being that I'm on a Civil War battlefield, I ran back and forth up and down the hill firing shots out of that cap gun and yelling, you know, like I was, you know, fighting. And within probably 5 minutes, less than that, probably like 3 or 4 minutes after doing that, it's like you heard gunshots and cannons going off in the distance. So trigger objects are as such, you know, you could put a beach ball down or a doll or a toy of some sort for kids to play with. It gets them to play with the object, or you can get something that the adults want to play with, or you can be doing such as like I did, which is running up downhill with a cap gun, and then you can trigger it triggers like a time of that battle, like they hear the fighting, like there's fighting going on, so they start firing back. Trigger objects are very cool. I love using certain trigger objects in certain areas. So yes, but it's not only to bring out somebody to play with it, but you can also do what it actually says, which is trigger an effect by using it.
Now, with everything that we've touched based on, from the different types of investigations to the equipment, to the scientific aspect, to the metaphysical aspect, the layman's terms, if you're listening to this particular podcast and you're curious how to get into the paranormal of investigating or researching or doing anything, it's very simple. You don't have to spend a ton of money to do this. There's all sorts of things that you can get from all different places all over the internet for all different prices. Everybody has a different budget. And you don't have to get 5, 6, 7 devices and then go out somewhere and say, hey, I'm going to use all this. I investigate now. Do whatever you're comfortable with. You know, pick up one item or two items and go somewhere. You don't necessarily have to do a official ghost tour somewhere and pay somebody to go do it. You don't have to do it at night. You can go anywhere and just ask questions the way you would to anybody. If I was standing there, Dalton was standing there, your next door neighbor was standing there, whoever, just be yourself. And as far as it goes with doing research about things, you don't necessarily have to research the area. I mean, some people go to graveyards, some people go to battlefields, some people go to historical places that may not necessarily have had some sort of emotional trauma or death, but have had some key pivotal events in the area. That's a place too.
Well, here's a pun for you. You know, there's a difference between a graveyard and a cemetery.
How's that?
A graveyard is where people are buried on church property where there's a church.
Okay.
Cemetery is as such. They're buried outside of the church grounds.
Well, that's not a pun. That's a factual statement. That's a learning lesson right
I know.
There. That's a a knowledge nugget, if I may say.
But right. So there is a difference between a graveyard and a cemetery, just so people would know that.
Okay. Appreciate the knowledge nugget there. But what I'm getting at is with the wonderful age of the internet and the public library and different places you can go, you can research and learn whatever your desire is in anything at all. And I guarantee you, depending on what you pick, you may find yourself being curious, or they're going to mention something else, and then that's going to spawn or make you want to research a different subject. And next thing you know, you're jumping around from subject to subject to subject, but you're starting to see how things tie together. And that's the cool thing about all of this, is you have free will. You can learn whatever you want, when you want, how you want, and go from there. If you want to investigate in a group, there are a ton of places all over the internet that you can find like-minded people like yourself, and you can go investigate. If you want to just do a chat forum on the internet of talking to people about similar like-minded ideas or thoughts or experiences or interests, you can do that also, but not have to investigate. If you want to be part of something that is only done during Halloween. You can do that also. My whole point is it's a personal thing. And you, at the end of the day, decide what is best for yourself and what you want to do. With mine and Dalton's experience with the paranormal, it's something that we grew up with. It's something that we've had a multitude of experiences. And then one day, me and Dalton said, hey, let's go ahead and do something that we can educate people on from our experiences and share things that we believe is our theory on a multitude of things and tell people just how it is. TV is great. Movies are great. But the thing is, they're both tied by one word, and that's entertainment. If you think about it long and hard, how many other places do you know that will actually go ahead and explain stuff to you about the paranormal? I'm not talking about, let me talk about my latest investigation and all the crazy stuff that happened. And let me tell you about, you know, how the light went off. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about point blank, this is how the paranormal works from someone's opinion. And let me explain to you the inner workings of it and why. I honestly haven't found a place like that yet.
And then take it upon yourself on what you believe. It's and I will say, when you go to some of these group chats and these websites, you're going to have more. What you got to be cautious with is you're going to have more skepticism in there than you will people that will actually know what they're talking about. So just be aware of that. I'm in some of the group chats and the Facebook pages. I get invited to a lot of that stuff all the time. And it kind of irritates me that somebody would get on, like, you know, there was a lady, and she posted a video of an orb. It was clearly an orb, because in the third picture, it actually moved off to the left. And of course, here comes the people. Oh, that's you know, camera flare.
Or that's dust. Or that's a light reflecting off something else. Or a million other answers.
And what irritates me is, if you're a skeptic and you don't even want to take the time to try to understand what's going on there, then don't post that. But I don't say anything. I keep my mouth shut.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to start a war, because that's what happened.
A difference of agreement with words is what Dalton's saying.
Right.
Or opinions.
Yeah. And so what I'll do is I'll just post, hey, you know, you definitely caught something there is what I can tell you. And then that's where I leave it. So all I'm trying to say is, when you go to like websites and group chats and stuff, try to find one that's all legitimate paranormal people that are all talking the same language. Now, I'm not saying that so that you can get a response that's always the yes, because true paranormal investigators like ourselves, like we've been on these other podcasts, will tell you, you know, nah, we don't, I'm not going to answer that, because there's not, it's not undisputable to me. Like, the evidence that we post on our Facebook page is pretty much undisputable. We have not been disputed on anything that we put up. I'm not going to put anything up that can be disputed. If I'm going to question it, guess what? Somebody else is going to question it, and I'm not going to put it up there to be questioned. If I can sit there and go, man, that is unexplained, I'm going to post it. So try to find people that are more like-minded in the paranormal, and that way you get a little bit better experience on where you're chatting and the pictures you're going to look at. But also keep in mind, take it upon yourself. Always take it upon yourself to, you know, what do you think? Do you think what you're looking at is real? Or, you know, if you've done research on camera flare, you know, and all the different things on how to debunk pictures and videos, then by all means, question it. Nobody's going to bother you to question it. I just don't like the people that come right out and just say, no, that's camera flare, or that's you moving. Or like, I seen a video. It was a nice catch. They had a camera in the backyard, and something, this white anomaly, it looked like it was crawling sideways, really weird. It crawled up over the fence and came at the back door. And one guy got on there and literally was like, oh, that's rain going down the front of the camera. And I so wanted to go, if it's rain in front of the camera, there would be a wet streak on the lens. There's nothing on the lens. You can clearly see this white anomaly. And it looks like something shining down from the sky almost. But I think the camera picked up the anomaly, and that was a flare coming off the anomaly. But anyway, my point is, the only thing I could say was, you definitely caught something, you know, because, again, you don't want to start a war. So,
and
but
the thing is, the way I look at it is this. Everybody has an opinion, and that's their right. But when it comes to certain technicalities, okay, of any type of evidence, and what I mean by technicalities, I mean by somebody looking at something, I will always lean to individuals that are specialized in the fields of being able to tell me yay or nay. And what I mean by that is if I really have a piece of audio that's an EVP, and I want to know, hey, what's up with this? It's going to be more than just listening to it or slowing it down a little bit. I will actually either A, by myself, or I will send it off to someone that's a professional in the background of audio that does this for a living. We'll be able to break it down on all the different levels of frequencies and say, hey, here's where it drops down here. Here's where it gets picked back up. The inflection's over here. This was right. There's actually three different layers within this particular pitch. You know, people that know exactly what's going on. You know, if your car's getting fixed, you're not going to go bring it to a bakery or to the deli at a grocery store and say, hey, fix my car. You're going to go bring your car to a mechanic to get it fixed. So when it comes to certain things, at least for me, and Dalton with Theory Paranormal, when we need to get a second of opinion, then we're going to go bring it to resources that we have to be able to get looked at. Rather it's video or it's audio, or sometimes if it's a piece of equipment that was made by myself or somebody else, and we want to say, hey, well, here's how it, you know, functioned. It resulted in, you know, yielded results. What's your two cents? Is it a fluke? Is it legit? You know, it's always good to try to go with someone that's specialized in whatever modality that you're dealing with. If I say that in air quotes, you have those type of contacts or resources. Otherwise, you just have to be prepared for other individuals just to shoot down automatically whatever it is you're putting out there. Because
a lot of times though, you know, when you take, if you do some EVPs, let's say, and you're dealing with audio, a lot of times I'll search out a person that is qualified in breaking down audio to find out low casted voices or any kind of voice or any kind of offset in the audio itself that may be somebody talking in the background. So I'll take it to one of those guys that's not even a paranormal investigator. Why is that, you ask? Because if I take it to a guy that's not even a paranormal investigator, but he can sit there and tell me, you definitely caught other voices on this audio. Well, that's coming straight out from a guy that doesn't know nothing about paranormal, so we must have caught something. It's undisputable. You can't dispute that.
And the reason why I bring all this up is sometimes when you're dealing with something and you want to be able to get an answer, and you don't necessarily have to have contacts at universities or organizations that are big box, you can find forums or different places that have to deal with audio or photos or video. You know, sometimes they'll have, you know, a little website or a blog that you can just throw something up on, or a Facebook group or wherever, and just say, hey, this is what I kind of caught. You know, anybody's two cents would be great. You know, I appreciate, you know, any constructive criticism or feedback. Please let me know. And I'm sure.
Or just get on there and say, hey, take a look at this video or this picture or whatever, and tell me what y'all think.
Yeah.
You know.
And a little bit of honey goes a long way, which is a metaphor for if you're nice and polite, you'd be surprised how much more people are willing to help instead of just, you know, expecting something. But as far as it goes, this is going to conclude the podcast on what a paranormal investigation is, what equipment is used, what the process is, and what defines it.
Are you going to talk about Luca?
I was getting to that part. And our guest individual that came investigated with us, Mr. Luca, much appreciated for your time and support to Theory Paranormal and coming out and having your first paranormal experience at May Stringer.
Ton of evidence that night. Ton of we got a lot of stuff to go over. We haven't had a chance to go over any photos or EVPs but we had a lot of spirit box, a lot of contact through the spirit box, through the SB11, a lot of flashlight activity. We put the 2K2s on the one bed, and both of them were flickering at the same level, which told me that somebody was laying in the bed there. Because if you put a 2K2s in a spot, especially like on a bed, one at the head, one at the feet, and they're both clicking at the same level, like they're timing at the same time, I'm just going to conclude my opinion would be that somebody's laying there in the bed. If you had one that, you know, it was going off a lot stronger than the other one, then obviously maybe that's movement and that end of the bed. I haven't quite decided how I want to play that as far as figuring that out, but we did have a little bit where 1K2 lit up a little more than the other one. But a lot of evidence concluding what we already knew. Just reiterating it, reinstating it, and making sure that in our past investigations on what we found out, you know, is we're still getting the same answers. That was a good thing. Just a lot of good stuff happened that night, and got so wrapped up in it that I even forgot to Facebook Live it. It's crazy, but
oh yeah, yep, we're definitely stayed busy. So, but with all that being said, if you're curious about anything with the May Stringer house that we have been speaking about tonight, we have a previous podcast. You can go back, I believe it's to podcast 12, season 1, and listen to it and learn about it and go from there. So we appreciate you listening to Theory Paranormal. If you have any questions or things you want us to review or see, or just any commentary about any of our podcasts, please feel free to email me and Dalton at info@theoryparanormal.com. And as always, as our closing statement that we say here at Theory Paranormal, don't be afraid to ask questions.